You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 12 December. We got UK GDP data this afternoon, expected 1.4%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. A programming note, this is our last live show of the year. We have recorded shows for all of next week, and then we're off until next year. On the show today, Gary Boyson, Rand Swiss, the Mr. Price European deal, market is still hating it. And the Fed, are they returning to QE? Why? I'm maybe confused. We'll get Gary's view. Andre De Wet from Flood, the rise of super apps as e-commerce grows locally. And then some thoughts from me, nine deals, 99 months. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, turns out AI trading bots behave just like humans. The losses are discouraging, but the bots are learning. Business Day, US advances AGOA renewal, but leaves SA status unresolved. Bill passed earlier this week makes no mention of South Africa's future in trade program. Morning markets, the US was mixed, the S&P was up 0.25%, Nasdaq down 0.4%. The East is green, Sydney up 0.25%, Tokyo almost 1% higher, Hong Kong 1.3% up, Tencent also 1.3% up. Commodities are mostly green, gold futures $4,301 an ounce, Brent is the red, $61.81, platinum $1,713, palladium $1,537, the rand $16.86, Bitcoin $92,200, top 40 opening call 670 points or a little over 0.75% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Gary Boyson. You find him, of course, at Rand Swiss. Gary, appreciate the early morning. We had the FOMC on Wednesday evening, our time. They did cut the rates by 0.2%. Interestingly, it was not a unanimous decision. That's the first time since, I think, 2019. But there was also a statement around buying $40 billion of Treasury bills a month, starting effective today. Is this QE coming back? Is there something else? Should we be worried? Am I misunderstanding things?
So it's. I think there are pains to say this is not QE. It's now called reserve management purchases, so RMPs. But it is very different from QE in that it's more simple, more comparable to, you know, the standard open market operations that a central bank will go through to supply liquidity to the system. So looking at it, the idea is that they're going to buy short-dated U.S. treasuries. This is as their mortgage-backed securities roll off the balance sheet. So, and really what it's doing is it's supplying liquidity to the system, specifically ahead of what they call tax day of April as well, which is essentially when there's a big flow of funds from the banking sector to the government sector. And it really is just about supplying liquidity. And because it's very focused on the short end of the yield curve, this is very different from QE. Remember, QE is a program that tends to buy more risky assets. It buys assets at the long end of the curve, and it really happens when you have the zero bound problem, when inflation is too low and you're actually trying to prevent that inflation. Now, whether that flows into assets or into consumer price inflation, that's a totally different debate. But with us sitting at CPI at 3% in the US, PCE, which is the Fed's measure, at 2.8, we're not in the world of QE at this stage. And also interest rates are not approaching zero bound. They still have room to cut. So very different mechanism.
Okay, I mean, in essence, just sort of central bank management, which is part of what central banks do. So let's shift to a definite world of pain. Mr. Price announcing that they were going to be buying for just under $10 billion a European discount fashion retailer. The market has absolutely hated it. Is this a really bad deal? Is the market just, tired of these offshore misadventures that have cost shareholders fortunes? What's your sense around this?
That's a big one. So yeah, the market absolutely hated that, and that's obviously why we saw the share price essentially wipe off the full value of the purchase in one day, which kind of maybe opens an opportunity. But I mean, history tells us to beware. I mean, South Africa has a very long track record of failing when retailers go overseas. I'm thinking, Woolworths with David Jones. Yeah. We've got Truworths with Office, which I mean is kind of turning around. But then, I actually forgot about when I was looking it up earlier. I mean, Brait, a new look in the UK. Oh. So I think that. Yeah, that was very painful, and I think that immediately creates that knee jerk reaction. I think also the valuation of the transaction has also been called into question. I mean, revenue growth at NKD has been very lackluster. Earnings have been spotty, and that's really an understatement as well. So you can understand why the market is panicking. And then on top of it, if you take a macro view of it, I mean, competition is high. You've got a shift in the way retail works. You've got the likes of Temu, Shein, Amazon. And very powerful online competitors. But, and it may be because shareholders weren't consulted either. This is a Category 2 transaction, which means that essentially because it's between 5 and 20% of the market cap, it's at least 30% of the market cap, it doesn't have to go to shareholder vote. So, yeah, it's an ugly transaction. But at the same time, does this not mean that maybe there is an opportunity in Mr. Price at the moment? So I'm sure, if you have, if you've kind of on X these days, you will have seen the letter from Cy Jacobs at 361. And I mean, that kind of like just saying, give us a reason and tell us what the break clauses are. And I mean, if the market's already wiped down the full value of the transaction and there is, let's say a reversal on the deal now, thanks to activist shareholder pressure, then you should immediately see a market spike. It could be a trading opportunity. At the same time, even if you don't see the reversal, maybe they do get it right. maybe they are seeing something in Eastern Europe and Germany and Italy that we don't see.
So, I take your point on that. I mean, maybe they do. And to be clear, Mr. Price are good operators, although also to be clear, good operators within the South African context. But there's also the sense that it is Category 2. I mean, at 10 billion, it's big money for you, I, and the listener out there. But they've got 3 billion of cash. They've got no debt on the balance sheet. I mean, maybe this isn't the worst deal in the world. I mean, we don't know, but I like your point. Maybe there is some opportunity there. Gary Boyson, Rand Swiss, appreciate the time this morning. Appreciate the time over the year. We'll chat again next year. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Andre Devet, he is CEO and co-founder of Flood. Andre, appreciate the early morning. A recent note you put out, you were talking around super apps, and I want to get to those in a second. But the number that absolutely hit me was e-commerce surging from 1% to almost 10% of all retail sales over the last 5 years. I mean, the pandemic obviously helped to a degree, but that is a staggering increase over what is frankly a relatively short period of time and must be getting us close to sort of the number we're seeing in developed market economies.
Simon, morning, and morning to your listeners. It's quite amazing what's happening in the in the take up of the digital space in the digital world, and the e-commerce number is quite substantial. How it's going, and starting to take a look at double digit numbers. Yes,
but the point, and you make this quite clearly, we still operate in silos. I've got to do every transaction on my phone is a different app, is a different sort of process, a different login, user experience, etc. And what you're looking at at Flood is saying this isn't the future. The future is going to be super apps.
Yeah, Simon, the two angles to the future is both super apps for bringing it all into one. In an emerging market, big things that you need are distribution and trust. Trust is probably the big thing, because if you're going to go out to the market and try and get people to download 10 apps, they're not going to do that, because you've got to re-educate for every single one of them. But they trust the bank and they trust the telco app, and they start to use the apps themselves. We believe there's a massive opportunity also in the offline market to be able to digitize or make the offline market digitally discoverable. If people are going in the e-commerce direction, let's get everybody in that arena.
I get your point. I mean, super apps. I mean, the best known Grab in Southeast Asia. We've got WeChat in China. And the idea is here is that I do, I mean, and I've seen the WeChat experience out of China. I can do everything in there. I can order the equivalent of an Uber ride or food. I can get a hair appointment. I can pay bills. I can chat to friends. It really is everything in just that one single app. And to your point, once I've trusted the app, it makes it frictionless and so much easier.
Mm. And, you know, if I can keep all my stuff together, you know, where my banking is done, my payment is done, and my loyalty itself is tracked in one space, it makes all the sense in the world.
Security then an issue, but I'm assuming that we have, just as a planet, we've kind of solved the security issue in mobiles and apps, I imagine.
Yeah, you know, I think from that argument, there's always the ups and the downs, and there's always going to be somebody that's going to send a phishing email.
Sure.
In the bigger picture, the scheme of things, the security issue has been sorted out. You know, the regulator and the payment platforms themselves make sure of that. They've had too much fraud on that platform. So I wouldn't, you know, give that too much of a thought.
Yeah, the risk is that it's the external, as you say, a phishing email. It's not an internal issue to the apps. Within South Africa, and I imagine growingly across the continent, we're actually well positioned for something like this because we have that very, very high mobile penetration across markets.
That's exactly the whole thinking around this is that, you know, you've got it and people have got the mobile in his hand every single day. He's taking a look at it and using it. And, you know, capitalize on that. In one of the territories that we work in, we went from people using an app 3 times a month to 27 times a month.
Sure.
And, you know, that's the user engagement that you're looking for.
Is it fit for purpose? I mean, are you sort of doing I imagine it's not necessarily a super app for Africa. It would be perhaps more regionalized, more localized in various instances.
Yeah, Simon, you know, when we were building iFlix across Africa, they said, let's do the same marketing campaign in Nigeria and in Kenya. I was like, guys, there's 54 countries in this on Africa. And this is a crucially important thing always is there's 54 countries on this continent and they're all different and all think differently. So a super app for Africa, we take a look at moving money in stable coin and things like that. You know, so remittance potentially, but other than that, every single country or every single territory is exactly has its own identity and its own solutions.
Yeah, and great point. Maybe remittance is the sort of one exception. And I imagine sort of how it's working is that you're bringing in the experts. I mean, let's take a ride hailing as an example. The app's not the ride hailing infrastructure. The app just facilitates that. You get the expert ride hailer and integrate that into the app. So it is just the experts in their different verticals.
So, I mean, I think you're right on the money there. The whole basis is to create a platform for third-party apps or platforms or solutions to be able to work on it. If I could build a platform on a telco's app, the telco's got 20, 30 million audience already. I don't have to re-download the app. That in itself is an expensive exercise. Mm. Build a platform where everybody externally in a geolocated area can start loading up their stuff or their product. And suddenly you're starting to get engagement on a daily basis in where people live.
Yeah, I get you. Have you? I mean, you mentioned seeing significant increase in terms of usage. You've obviously got lots of experience around this. Are you seeing? You know, I'm thinking positive results, particularly from the business. And I'm thinking, you know, small business as well. It's a great opportunity. I mentioned a hairdresser who otherwise wouldn't normally be there. Do you see them getting better business, new customers, sort of growing the business as they interact? I would imagine this is a huge opportunity for sort of small, medium, and micro.
Massively so, Simon. The beauty about this is it's geolocated. So the guy is like a megaphone for a small business because suddenly he can send a message, but just to people in his vicinity. Mm-hmm. So everybody within a 500 meter radius on that specific app gets a message saying the bread has just come out the oven. It's fresh and available. Come get it now. Or the, the shoes that we ordered from Asia have arrived. Come get your shoes that you ordered last week. And that in itself creates massive traction. The whole basis idea is to get traffic in store.
Regulatory environment, I imagine. I mean, the key point there would be the sort of the financial regulatory environment. That is mostly solved, I would think. Certainly, we have got these happening. We have got the guidelines, so that's not necessarily a challenge.
Well, exactly, Simon. You know, it's like the security thing is the regulatory environment. The African governments are very much on top of regulatory stuff for money and money sending and AML and all of that type of or everything else that goes with it. That is pretty sorted and secure. We don't try and rewrite what the payment processes are doing. They've got that. They follow the rules, and we make sure that they stick to that.
Yeah. We'll leave it to Andrew De Wet, CEO, co-founder, Flood. Appreciate the early morning time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Some thoughts for me in a year that was, I mean, this has been an absolutely crazy year. It's been a brilliant year for an investor. If you were in most equities, there are some exceptions, looking at you, Mr. Price. But broadly, whether you were local, whether you were offshore, this has been a good year for investors. But if you think about the year, we go back to January, it was DeepSeek. It was Trump throwing tariffs at Canada and Mexico. February, 3 budget attempts. I mean, we forget about that. And then, of course, we had a really good medium-term budget policy statement back in November. And the big one, of course, the really, really big one was that Liberation Day tariffs on the 2nd of April. That shook markets. Our market was down about 10%. US markets, S&P, a little under 20% lower. NASDAQ was more than 20% down. And it really did feel... It was scary, right? Market selling off absolutely was scary. In hindsight, the right thing was to not panic, and that usually is the right response. Panicking is particularly for a broad market, never a good idea. As a quick aside, individual stock, something happened. Think Steinhoff. Then panicking and panicking quick is the right response. But broad sell-offs, markets do it, markets recover. And then, of course, Liberation Day tariffs became Liberation Day capitulation a week later on the 8th of April. And we were promised 90 deals in 90 days. I was trying to find out how many deals the Trump administration has done. And the answer is uncertain. There are some frameworks out there with the UK and China, for example, but there don't seem to be any real sort of deals. If we're being sort of charitable, we could say 9 deals in 9 months. Here's the thing. The Trump administration doesn't really need to or want to do deals. We can debate why, but patently that this is not top of their agenda. They want the revenue from tariffs. Now, I mean, is it a good deal for the American economy? We'll park that aside as well. But what's happening, quite simply, is that the talk is then just shifting. Everyone else is saying, well, the American market is not what it was a year ago, and we need to find new plans. Best witnessed perhaps by the fact that the November trade export data from China was a record month for them. The rest of the world is moving around the problem and sort of making deals with themselves. It's going to take time. It's going to be slow, but it absolutely is happening. And then a quick last for me. This is the last live show of the year. As I said up top, we have recordings for next week. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, who makes my audio always epic, Nabuchle, who always gets me brilliant guests, and Nicole, who takes my gibberish and makes it readable. Stand-ins, Tulani, Masakla, Siren, thanks to them as well. And my guests, I mean, they wake up early, they give us their thoughts, I'm able to pick their brains. It's a privilege for me, a huge thanks to them. And of course, the listeners, without who I would just be talking into the void, and that would be no fun. Thanks to all. That's it for today. We were chatting with Brendan De Jong from PMX yesterday, talking around forecasting and how, as much as we love the concept of forecasting, both doing it ourselves and listening to it, we're just not very good at it. And then that's because the future is, well, frankly, unknown. We asked you, do you listen to forecasts? And the answer we equally split. Only from experts, no, the future is unknown, and some saying just for fun. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an awesome review and a positive rating in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll be back Monday. Saab concerned about the AI boom.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.